Okay, I will call this meeting of the Blaine City Council to order February 26th. And it is about approximately 6:15. A little late start tonight. Okay, may we have a moment of silence, please? Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have roll call, please?
Yeah, Eric Davidson.
Here.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Meg Olson.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
And Alicia Rule.
Here.
So Mary Lou Stewart requested to be excused.
So moved. Second.
Motion moved and seconded to excuse Mary Lou. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passed.
Sam, you got the clipboard.
We have someone here to speak before us tonight and anybody else who might have signed up. But Leslie Smith, will you please come up and give us your presentation on music students from Japan coming to Blaine.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here again. I always appreciate the support that the City Council gives to this program. First of all, I would like to cordially invite, extend an invitation to the Blaine City Council, Mayor Onion, City Manager Rubeck, to attend the Asakawa Commerce High School concert, which is presented by the Blaine High School Music Program, the Blaine Fine Arts Association, and the Blaine School District, which features the Asakawa Commerce High School Band from Asakawa, Hokkaido, Japan. This concert will be held on Monday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center in Blaine. I also invite Mayor Onion and City Manager Wilbrecht, if possible, to attend the welcoming ceremony on Friday, March 23rd, and the farewell ceremony and recognition, including dinner hosted by everyone. The host families for the students will all be attending that. And there's a farewell mini-concert with the host families on that takes place on Friday, March 30th. And we would love to have your presence there if that's possible. It would be our honor to have you speak, welcoming the director of the band, Mr. Yun Sato, the chaperones, and the 64 students to our city, and also doing the farewell to say farewell and sayonara at the closing ceremonies. Again, our deepest thanks and gratitude for your continued support for the Blaine High School Wind Ensemble and for the many bands that have come from various cities and regions in Japan that have visited our community over the past 15 years. I've brought with me a schedule for you. I will leave that. It just gives an outline of their visit for the 1 week because they'll be here from Friday, March 23rd until Saturday, March 31st. And it's a huge and very busy schedule that they have. But one of the great things is that they will be doing a walking tour of Blaine on Saturday, March 24th, and taking the Plover, so they'll go to the Peace Arch, they'll stop for ice cream, and just do a whole walking tour around Blaine before they have a rehearsal in the afternoon. So that'll be a fun day for them around Blaine. Monday, the entire day is at the Blaine School District. They're doing a concert for the students at the elementary and then the public concert that evening. So please share with anyone that you know that you think will be interested in that. It's usually a very full concert, and they not only play music, but they're very entertaining as well, dancing, singing. They will also perform at three other locations in the county. Western Washington University on Tuesday. They will be at Ferndale High School on Thursday, and they will be at Bellingham High School on Friday. And while they're doing all of those things in those areas, they will visit some highlights in the city of Bellingham, like Fairhaven, and at before they go to Ferndale, they'll visit Linden Pioneer Museum. So they will see a lot of our county and the different cities in the area, and then one day they'll be in O'Connor. So they pack a lot of punch into their very short visit, but they're super excited to come here, and I know that they always appreciate the pins that the city give us to give to them, and that's always something that they treasure. I have gone back there numerous times to Japan, and they all, from the very first group that's visited, still wear the pins, still talk about the pins, and still talk about their experience in Blaine. So the reason that these groups come here is because all of the band directors talk to each other in Japan, and they talk about Blaine, and so then the other groups want to come to Blaine. So I think that's a feather in your cap for having such a great, friendly city here in Blaine that's so welcoming to them. So I hope that you can come, and I hope all of you can attend the concert on Monday, and I hope I'll be able to see both you, Dave, and Bonnie at any of the events that I mentioned, as well as the dinner that we're having for the directors. So I will leave the outline, and I will leave this letter for you, thanking you for your continued support in that program. Do you have any questions for me about this?
Any questions for Leslie?
All right. Thank you so much for having me here, and I look forward to seeing all of you at the concert. Pressure's on now.
We have a council meeting that night, unfortunately. So when you don't see us, know that we'd love to be there. But we have a council meeting that night.
Well, if you have a chance to pop into the elementary school in the morning or the Performing Arts Center in the morning, I think the concert is at 9:30 or 10. So you can kind of just pop in there if you have the opportunity.
Where would be a good place to find those details?
You can contact me. I can send that information. I think actually Cheryl might have the information here on how to contact me.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Okay, another person who signed up to speak is Al Dahl.
My name is Al Dahl, and I live here in Blaine now. And I was encouraged to sit in on a utility study meeting here just prior to this council meeting, and primarily because of an ADU that I built, not intending to actually do an ADU, but coming to discover the utility fees that are connected with that. And I was very appreciative of hearing that the rate for the ADUs is proposed to be reduced to 50% of the residential ADU. Connection fee costs. And so I would like to encourage council to consider that, and I would anticipate that you will, to set up barriers to this kinds of things, I think is counterproductive, and I think this action would go toward the other side and encourage ADUs and the infill in the city and increase the population. Taxes would, more jobs, people earning money here, that sort of thing. I know a lot of ADUs are used for the housing of elderly parents and or those sort of things, and that might not be that big of a gain for the city. However, I think the overall, if we have more people in town, we will certainly have more need for more services that brings in businesses and so on. So I just want you to consider that in a positive light. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dahl. Okay, next we'll move on to the fire chief's report, who is not here. So we will move on to written communications. We have, do you want to read,
yeah, sure.
Sam, what we've got?
Yeah, so we have an email dated February 16th, 2018 from Michael Jones regarding the Lincoln Park letter to the editor. A letter dated February 19th, 2018 from Stan Monks regarding Track D of Sea Smoke Development. Emails dated February 20th, 2018 from Mayor Onion regarding the town hall meeting with 42nd District legislators. Email dated February 22nd, 2018 from Patrick Rooney regarding the UGA sewer ordinance. And we got some new emails in and written communication, one of which is dated today from Mayor Onion regarding legislative updates on Blaine projects, as well as letters dated February 26th today from Dennis Olson regarding the Voters' Right Act.
And that was two letters from him.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Next we have the consent agenda. We have a voucher memo and approval of bills in the amount of $127,333.58, and approval of the February 12th council meeting minutes, February 21st special council meeting minutes, approval of Public Works Advisory Committee appointment, and accepting the Vista Terrace electrical conversion project as complete. Does anybody have any questions on any of the consent agenda items? No questions? Okay, may I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
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 Motion passes 6-0. We do not have any council action items this evening, and so we will move on to commission, committee, and board reports. Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee and Blaine Chamber.
No report.
No reports. Okay. Boys and Girls Club. Alicia.
No report.
Board Port of Bellingham.
No report.
Okay. Drayton Harbor Shellfish and Marine Advisory Committee. Charlie.
No report.
Library Committee and Senior Center. Meg.
Lots of fun tonight.
No report.
No report. That happens that way sometimes. WTA Board.
There's discussion on the WTA about. The Lincoln Creek project near WWU, which is it won't affect the city of Blaine per se, but it's a WWU project that WTA is going to want to be involved in for their own transportation, and it's going to cost WTA about roughly $2 million at this point. So we'll keep you guys on the radar. That shouldn't affect us here necessarily, but just...
How does the creek affect the buses?
Well, they call it Lincoln Creek. There's a Lincoln Creek there, but it's a big parking
gotcha.
Structure there. It's an empty lot that people park on. So yeah, it's an empty lot that people park on, and okay. So they're going to use it for both WWU students as well as WTA and like a park and ride area as well.
Okay.
So
okay, thank
it was a drive-in theater back in the day.
What are they doing to it, briefly?
So WWU primarily is going to be doing the work on it, and they're going to be paving it. They're going to charge students for there, and then WTA is going to have essentially like they have in Ferndale, a small kind of hub where there's six or eight buses that can go. There's going to be a bathroom there. There's also going to be a place for people who do park and ride to the greater Seattle area that can park, pick up a van there, pick up a bus there. So an additional transit station right there by the freeway. So,
thanks. Did you say it was the old drive-in, Charlie?
Yes.
It used to be the motor view.
Public Works Advisory Committee, is there any report, Eric?
No.
Okay. Blaine Economic Development, I have no report on that. Small Cities Caucus, they're in need of a member from the small cities for the left one law enforcement officers fund or whatever. I'm not sure how to describe that, but there's an advisory board that looks at all the claims, I believe, monthly. And Eric is considering that position. We have no red loans applied for. Whatcom Council of Governments, that we only meet every other month, so there's a meeting in March. And nothing for Whatcom County Council. Alicia, I wanted to ask you, would you just assume, I'm thinking of having the Whatcom County Council taken off of here as a regular report, and I will just, as needed, as I make contact with them for any issues that affect them, I will just report on that. Would you like to do the same with the Port of Bellingham? Or do you want to keep it on the list?
I guess I would ask the group. I could potentially give you like a once a month based on, you know, summary of what they did at the port, even if it's not. I mean, I think it might be worth just keeping tabs on it.
Okay.
What do you all think?
If you're going to go.
I might not go, but I'll at least pay enough attention to be able to give you a brief update. Both of those are both online, so if you can't go,
that's why. And it's not like we are an established liaison that they ask for someone from the small cities to participate or something.
When I originally brought it up, I was thinking about how could we best serve the city of Blaine by being in better paying closer attention to what's going on and perhaps be more involved with that. Because I do think we fit in a larger community. But I could go either way on that. What does the group think? I'm happy
I'd
to report
like to
once
report.
A month. But
okay.
We'll keep them both on.
All right. We'll just report this meeting as,
sure.
as we come across something that affects us. Okay, on to department reports. We'll start with Public Works project updates.
A brief report this evening. The tour of the wastewater plant, along with a discussion with the City of Oak Harbor folks, was moved to the 7th, which is a week from this Wednesday, and I believe we set 10 o'clock. 10:30?
It's going to be.
Okay, 10:30. So a couple of you that expressed interest other than Mayor Onion, I copied on the invitation, and I apologize for all the updated emails, but we kept trying to hold a day aside, and those days kept not working out. So a follow-up to the street vacation ordinance that we talked about last night, that is with John Sitkin right now, and he's working on it, and we talked to him about it this afternoon, and kind of gave him the essence of what we were trying to accomplish, and so he is going to hopefully have something for me soon. I'd like to get that back to you while the topic is somewhat fresh. We had interviews last week for the Bablett corridor improvements that we got funding for last year. Just as an aside, we're required for architectural and engineering services to choose the most qualified consultant and then negotiate a price. I'm happy to say that we selected Rycobe Eby of Linden to design that project, and with all their experience in that area, 8th Street, Bablett, Ludwig, Odell, I mean, they were just hands down the most qualified, so we're really excited about getting that started. Very interesting IMTC core team meeting on the 15th, the rail topic. They had a fellow from Amtrak as well as the gentleman from WashDOT who does all the rail planning for the state. And they really haven't changed anything in terms of their stand and station stop policy. I did hear that the City of White Rock and the City of Surrey are going in together on a feasibility study for the realignment of the rail along the water there in White Rock, and really that's where our opportunity lies, because if we just propose a stop and we don't have some savings in time somewhere in the system, they're not going to consider it. So I still think it's a long shot for us, but I think staying involved and keeping our ears to the ground in terms of the topic is a good thing. So one thing that they are starting to look at, still very much in a feasibility, big picture way, is high-speed rail. And they're looking at like 200 miles an hour kind of high-speed rail, not even what you see with the bullet trains in Japan. So pretty interesting. And that would go from Portland to Seattle. I don't know that it would go all the way up to Vancouver, even though the right away that you'd have to acquire is huge. Because you can't have any of those at-grade crossings like we have here in Blaine. Last week or last meeting, I reported that well 5.1 was down, and it is back up. We actually had an amazing turnaround, so I found out that same day at council Monday, and it was back in operation the end of the day on Thursday. So they fast-tracked everything. It was all under warranty, no cost to the city. And we're back on track with perfecting our water rate, hopefully sometime in March for that well. Just a brief dialogue on our snow response on Friday. It was kind of the perfect storm. We did have staff out on the roads that morning putting down de-icer, and then the minute it started turning to snow, we started putting down sand. Then, as you know, the heavy snow really started hitting, and unfortunately our street folks start at 4 in the morning on Fridays because they usually sweep, or in this case they were doing de-icer. I think think we still were pretty on top of it, but I did get a couple of emails about downtown. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm aware of it, and I'm going to be talking with the crew about some of the areas that I saw. Really look to the police department, actually, to let us know of problem locations. But I always make a point when we have snow to drive around myself, and I definitely think we could have done more downtown. So just letting you know that that'll be... You know, we always try to target the worst hit areas, and that differs every storm, right? Because we have all these microclimates. So, in any event, I'm not aware of any accidents in Blaine. I know they had a lot on I-5. Great news for me. We finally have the assistant director position on the street. So, if you know anyone who is involved in water, wastewater, electric, lights, the operation and maintenance of the same, that's really what we're looking for. And looking forward to hopefully recruiting a great candidate. Any questions?
On that position, you're not requiring an engineer per se, correct?
That's correct. I softened that language considerably. And the primary reason is you have two professional engineers already in public works, which is already one more than many of the small cities. Okay. So I didn't see that as important as having someone that has like a wastewater operator experience or water operator training, that kind of thing. Not that I'm going to have them out in the plant operating anything, but someone who's had that experience knows what a PLC and a VFI and a EFD and all the lingo. Our plant is so high tech that it does require a very different skill set.
That's a pretty specified skill set if we're looking for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Going back to the snow removal on the roads,
mm-hmm.
could you clarify for me what the usual procedure is? I understand that it sounds like their day was finished early if they start that early. Is that usual or?
It's a Friday thing. We sweep the streets appointment every Friday, so that means our street person starts at 4 in the morning so that they're not out with traffic and all that when they're trying to sweep. And I should clarify, we have other people that operate a snowplow all day on Friday. So it wasn't that we just stopped at noon. I didn't mean to indicate that. But our street crew was on the main side on Friday.
So if we have a Friday night snowstorm,
mm-hmm.
we have crew that can go out if necessary.
We have an emergency number, and we always have staff on call for any emergency.
Okay. Yeah, I did drive through downtown several times, and luckily I all-wheel drive, but it was quite a bit of snow, and I didn't see too much happening there to get it cleared. It was a little bit concerning to me, so thank you for noting that.
Okay.
And as far as street sweeping, we do it every Friday, but we don't do the whole city every Friday, correct?
No, we don't do the whole city every Friday, but they're out there pretty much their whole shift.
It seems that they come around maybe once a month in my neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
which is sufficient in the kind of neighborhood I'm in. But I think they hit the arterials maybe a little more often.
Definitely anywhere where there's curb and gutter. We need to hit those first because you start getting things accumulating in the gutter and things get plugged up. In the fall, you'll see us out a lot more because they're picking up leaves, and then when they start putting down sand, they need to go out and pick up the sand. So it's, you know, it evolves in terms of the amount of energy that we put into it, but we do have operators that start early every Friday.
They do a good job. Our city is clean.
They're very proud. When we do the rodeo, I always say, hey, you know, let's take the week off from sweeping, you know, just 1 week. And they're like, no, I'll just go out and I'll do my deal, and then I'll lay out, you know, the boundaries and the parks and parking lot back there. And every year they talk me out of it. So,
yeah.
Okay, they take a lot of pride in what they do.
That's great. Thank you. Community development. We have a development report and an enforcement report.
We do. Raven said hers would be short. Mine won't be. but it's once a year, right? So, and it's all good news for the most part. At least, yeah, for the most part. So for some of the council members, this is the first time for you potentially hearing one of these year-end reports. Obviously, this is a wrap-up of development activity in the city, and the page that you have is sort of a summary of some of the key bits there. We'll also do the enforcement report, and typically you'll hear from us twice a year on this, mid-year and then at the end of the year. One of the things that's important to note for the development, we tag things or date things based on when they're vested applications, so when they come in as complete. So sometimes we're talking about things that you haven't seen start yet. So we're talking about this development project, and it must be fictional or in their imagination. It's because it hasn't come out on the ground yet. And sometimes that takes a long time. And sometimes people apply for and get approved for projects that they never do. That happens occasionally as well. So first off, residential building permits, there were 46 in 2017. If you look back over the past couple of years, that is down from 2016 and is a little bit up over 2015. So that's a decent number. 2017 was higher in particular because Marin came in again, and because the Semyama Shore, was putting a lot of units in that year. They're not all done yet, but they were all vested for the most part in that year. So that's part of what the 72 is. 46 is not unusual for Blaine, and except for some bumps, that's been a fairly typical thing over the past couple of decades. We would like to see that number get bigger. One of the things is we have to have plats. We have to have neighborhoods to support that. And for a while, since the recession, we've had a real deficit of buildable lots. This is what it looks like as you look back a while. And if you could see back further in time, you'd see a big spike in 2004, 2005 during the housing boom, and then a plummet down to like 18, I think, was the low number after that in 2007. So it's 46 is a decent number. And so housing starts, that relates to single-family homes, duplexes, multifamily. We're counting the number of units, not the number of buildings. And then what does that look like in value? What does that look like in dollars? These are the things that represent taxable real estate. So this is what they're valued at as construction, meaning what is reported to the building department, not what they're assessed as from the assessor, but there's a correlation to some degree there. It's also not the actual value of construction, ironically enough, because if you put concrete or if you put granite countertops in or you put in formica, it's still kind of correlated as a countertop. Sometimes people put a lot more money into their homes than these numbers may represent. But residential, really big part of that number, a total of 20,000 almost, excuse me, 20 million, almost 21 million, and most of that was residential. That is pretty normal for us. And the non-residential is about $3.5 million. So that's a pretty typical split for us. It's usually somewhere around three-quarters residential, one-quarter commercial. But there have been variations on that over time. In fact, in recent years, and I'll talk about that in a moment. This is one of our development snapshots. This is 568 Peace Portal Drive. Of course, you all know what that is, I think. That's the future Starbucks building at Sky Hill Station. Adjacent to that, just off the screen on the right, is the new Welcome Center that the city's going to be leasing from the property owner there. That building is going to have a top on it that looks like a lighthouse, light tower, so there's a little bit more construction to go. And that is a shell-only valuation, so there's a tenant improvement permit that will be coming in that has all of the tenant's facilities. So that doesn't include things like floor finishes and faucets and plumbing fixtures. It's just the shell and the in the ground and in the walls kind of stuff. So this is what our last few years of construction value look like, you can see that spike in 2016 and even a pretty healthy number in 2015 for us, but better than this year for non-residential. That is what I meant. Every once in a while we have something that's atypical, and what that represents is the school construction. So in 2015 they did the primary school, I think it was. additions and remodels, a $3 million construction value. And then in 2016, they did the high school, which was also well over $20 million in construction value. So when you normalize that, it looks more like this. The residential, I'm going to flip back, see the peak with non-residential up above residential, and the scale goes up to 35,000, or excuse me, 35 million. I can't imagine, right? It's like it's too big of a number for my brain. 35 million, and if we flip over here, the scale has changed, and you can see that it's residential that's really making up most of our construction value. That's more normal. That's what we would typically see, but every once in a while we have something like the high school. We had the wastewater treatment plant for a couple of years. It did the same thing to the numbers. And well, what does that mean? What that means in permit fees is that we collected 160% of our expected budgeted permit fees last year, and so that's for building permits. It doesn't actually represent every single building permit. Things like re-roofing and whatnot are not calculated into those numbers because it's very difficult for us to deal with the system that we have, but it is, it'll be easier now that we have a new system, but for now it's kind of just the big ones, homes and commercial construction, and you can see that the budget was about $200,000. We collected a little over $300,000. Building inspections keeps Tim and Cliff, but mostly Cliff, very busy, and there were 1,000 inspections, just over 1,000 inspections last year. That is an increase over the prior year, so it continues to just be busy. It takes someone out there. Cliff is out in the field most days. He's actually out on job sites driving around from place to place. He does do some plan review, and he does do some archiving, and he helps customers at the counter. But I would say that probably 75 to 85% of his time, typical week, is out in the field actually doing inspections. And he does inspections on all sorts of projects, including something like this, which is 1055 Clyde Street. It's a duplex. Those two units there in total are close to 3,000 square feet of new space, $357,000 valuation. And again, that's not necessarily how much it costs to build it. It's just the calculation that comes through with the building permit processing. And that's how fees are established. So there has to be a uniformity of doing that calculation, or it'd be very hard to establish a fee structure. Permit fees for, this is land use, it says includes all building permit types. Apologize for that, it's a typo. This is for land use permits, so not building. And this also was over budget. We estimated $25,000 and it came in at $33,000. This is one that Jeff and I toy around with every year, and I probably say this every year. We never really know. We have to like use our crystal ball because it only takes one or two projects that come in that are bigger and more expensive than we expect, and it just throws the numbers off. And we don't like to estimate really high and then come in low, so you'll probably continue to see this, but I still feel like it's a really good thing when we come in over budget for revenue. So land use applications, these are things that come in as an actual application to do something that requires a permit. Most of those are processed by staff, so you can see the big blue field there. 60% were handled by staff as administrative permits. 20 of those went to the Planning Commission, and 4 of them came to you. So you see sort of like an iceberg of land use permits. It's only that little piece that sticks up above the water that you actually see here at Council. The Planning Commission had a big increase over the prior year, and staff did as well, 43% increase over 2016.
Michael, can you give a couple examples on what would come to Council?
Sure. A conditional use permit is something that's not approvable by staff, but it is approvable by the Planning Commission, and that stops there. A variance is another example that doesn't come to Council. Council sees planned unit developments because those are essentially rezones of the property, and Council sees things like zone changes, comprehensive plan amendments, those kinds of things. But most land use activities you don't see because you make the laws, and then we have a structure to implement those laws, so that you only see a few. Preliminary plats also come to Council and final plats, but that actually, final plats can actually be handled administratively by staff now under Washington state law, so we'd have to change our city law to do that. But there's a wide variety of things that don't arrive at council. But you honestly would have no time to do the rest of your job if all that stuff came to you. Then there are a lot of other things that are administrative actions. Yes, sir?
Quick question about the last slide. So the Planning Commission saw 20 this year. Why the big jump? Is there something specific that's been going on there?
No, it's just an increase in development activity. That's all, really. It's just what people have come in with. We haven't changed our laws that initiated it, and we haven't, like, you know, annexed a new area that has initiated it. It's just simply people coming in with more things that they're interested in doing. And Planning Commission has a lot of shoreline permits. That's a big piece of it. And we also have our code set up that requires a lot of conditional use permits. And because we have so much shoreline, well, we also have a fair number of shoreline permits. That's part of what drives the Planning Commission number whenever there's a development activity. These are things that don't actually get permits, but they still take significant amount of work on staff's time. So there were 26 formal administrative actions, CEPA determinations, critical areas determinations. Those aren't actually permits, so they don't show up on that other number, but these are other things that happen. An example is the design review for something like Sky Hill Station. There were a bunch of meetings, multiple different designs were submitted. We worked through a couple of different approvals for them as they evolved their project. That happens as a staff level, but it's not technically a permit, so it doesn't show up in those other tables. This is one of our commercial projects that's ongoing. It's a Bioplex expansion, or their second building down there near Totally Chocolate, just south of Totally Chocolate. And it's, as it says, it's $1.6 million. This is a pretty typical kind of project for us for commercial construction. About $1 to $2 or $3 million is where those usually fall. And if you reflect back on some of those other numbers for commercial construction, that means we only get a couple a year. That's pretty typical. At least it has been for the past several years.
Michael, I have a question. Is the building next to this one Bioplex building? So they've built a separate building instead of adding on to their existing.
Right.
They've just built a new one next door.
Yeah, that was their original plan. So they came in with a proposal a long time ago to build two buildings on that site with parking and truck access in between. Uh-huh. And so they built the one with offices in the front and a production facility in the back. And they've been up and running and done a couple of different product lines in there during those years. And now they have an expansion facility. I suspect it's probably a different product line. Tim might actually know more about that than me.
But it's manufacturing.
It's manufacturing.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. And as you can probably see, I brought a little bit of a support network here tonight. Maddie's going to give the code enforcement report, and Tim's going to chime in just a bit at the end on code enforcement for some of the Peace Portal properties. And that should wrap it up. We're happy to answer all your questions about this stuff at that point.
Good evening. I'm Maddie Otley, Community Planner and Code Enforcement Officer for the city. So, let's see here. This year we had 124 cases. Each case refers to a property. So each property can have a different number of violations, but currently I'm categorizing them as a case is represents a property that has a violation on it. So this is a pretty typical layout of the type of violations we have. The majority is vegetation. And that's mostly my entire summer. But then we have a lot of trash. We have about 19% referred to substandard structures, so it could be something structural that's going on with it, or it could be something that's not structural, like a paint or a broken window or something else like that. We had a significant amount of permit violations this year. We had a typical amount of vehicles, a few signs, and then a few miscellaneous items as well. So for resolved substandard structures this year, we had 6 demolitions and 6 repairs. So for the demolitions, we had 2 residences, a commercial structure, a barn, which is seen in this photo here, and some accessory structures like garages and sheds and that kind of thing. And this one on the slide is at 1355 F Street, and it was a barn, and now it's gone. So I like to always give a little update on our active substandard structures. So right now we have about 7 identified to have some issues. 6 out of 7 are unoccupied, and that's a pretty common thing, that these structures that are unoccupied, you know, the property either doesn't live in town most of the time or they're not keeping an eye on it, and things happen, structures deteriorate over time. 3 of these 7 buildings are owned by Country Enterprises. I'm not sure if some of you new council members know about it, but it's owned by one property owner. He has a few properties in town. He has not been doing a great job of maintaining them, and so he actually has 4 that we've had code enforcement cases with. One was Rocky Mountain Trading Post, which is over by the south side of town and right next to the freeway entrance, and that got demolished in 2017. And so he has 3 other properties as well, one on Bell Road that's really close to Rocky Mountain, one on C Street, and one off of E Street. And all 3 of those have been ordered demolished. He's no longer responding to the city, so we're actually working with the city attorney to file a motion with the hearing examiner in order to abate the violations ourselves, and so get all that paperwork in place, and so we can legally do that, and then hopefully get some funding in the future to do that. But at the time, they're all boarded, secure, clean on the outside, but we're just working on trying to get that legality in place in order to do the work ourselves, if we have to. Right. And this is kind of a new thing we're reporting on. So of the 124 cases, 116 were voluntary. And that's what I call like voluntary correction, in that property owners responded to our letters and they cleaned up themselves in a timely manner. And so we didn't have to do anything formal with them. We put a big effort into sending out informal notices first, just saying, hey, there's a problem here, we'd love it if you clean it up. And as you can see, the majority of the time they do. About 8 were non-compliant, so we issued 6 notices of civil violations. So those are the formal notice process. So when we issue those, it's a formal notice, it's a $250 daily penalty for each day that there's an act of violations, so the penalty can quickly add up, especially if they're non-responsive. We issued 1 stop work order this year, and we had 1 dangerous building determination recorded. So I was kind of alluding to that. The fines can add up quickly, right? So 79,000 were assessed in notice of civil violation fines. So we keep track of that, saying, you know, for each day, the fine is adding up, right? And so 79,000 were assessed. Almost all of those notices of civil violations go to the hearing examiner. So he's a third-party judge in town who decides if the city has accurately assessed the violations. And if we have, then he rules in favor of the city. He's ruled in favor of the city in all of the cases so far. But based on compliance by the property owners and setting forth a timeline, he often forgives a lot of the fines. And so we ended up having $12,000 ordered by the hearing examiner in 2017. So for this year, we collected about $4,700 in enforcement fines. We leaned about almost $18,000, and a lien is placed based on if someone either complied with the hearing examiner order, or if they didn't and they didn't pay us, then we can put a lien on the property. A big part of that is because we actually had 1 city abatement project this year, which I'll go over really soon. And $13,000 are scheduled to be paid in 2018. And since the start of the year, we've had about $4,000 come in. So, out of that. I always like to go over some of our successes this year. So this was Rocky Mountain Trading Post that was down on the south end of town. And they had quite a few violations there. As you can see, the structure is dilapidated. They have a big sign in there for a long time. They had junk vehicles. There's semi-trucks in the back, overgrown vegetation. And so it took us a while, almost a year, to get everything cleared off of there, but it's gone now. So that was a really big success in 2017 for us. This is our abatement project. This is the first time we ever used city funds to abate a violation. We worked with the property owner, we got their permission, and so this is off Garfield Avenue. there's quite a few violations here as well. A whole bunch of substandard structures. They had some junk vehicles. There was a septic tank that was open. It was closed. It's not in use anymore, but it was open and there was trash in there. There was some dangerous trees in the back, a pile of garbage, all sorts of things. So I'll just flip through the pictures here real quick. Unfortunately, it was like a hoarding situation, so it was pretty unsanitary. But this is afterwards. So we got all of those substandard structures down. There's new gravel in the driveway. All the trash is gone. We're really proud of this case. And I actually got a call from the property owner a few days ago saying, you know what, first I was really upset about this, but it's a lot better now. I'm glad to hear that. So there's two junk vehicles left. We kind of moved them to the back, so they're harder to see, but we'd like to get some funding in order to remove those. They have some asbestos, so we didn't include it in this project, but hopefully in the near future. And that's it. Are there any questions about enforcement?
At what point, can you just kind of briefly step through the process? At what point do people get to the $250 a day violation point?
Yeah, so I send out a letter, an informal letter that's, you know, identifies, hey, these are the problems on your property. You have a certain amount of time. I typically, for like trash or vegetation, I give 2 to 3 weeks. If it's something more, I may give like a month and a half. So I set forth a timeline. I usually say, hey, it needs to be resolved within this timeline. Or give me a call and we'll set up a voluntary correction agreement, which is like an informal document signed between the city and the property owner to resolve a violation in a certain time frame. Oftentimes they'll be like, hey, we know this is a problem. Can you give us 2 months? Like, that's fine. So we enter into this voluntary correction agreement, and then if it's done in time, then the case is closed. But if they don't respond or they don't do it in a timely manner, and that's often the case, they just don't respond, we issue that notice of civil violation, and that's when the $250 daily penalty starts. And so for each day that violation still exists, that fine is occurred. That's kind of
what it's so if the owner is in communication with the city, it's a lot easier process for them to not have to incur any fines and easier for everybody.
Okay. Definitely, yep. Anything else? All right.
Okay. Thanks, Maddie.
I just wanted to take a moment to commend Maddie on really doing a tremendous job. She does not have an easy job. And she spends about half of her time on enforcement. That varies, you know, sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. She's doing a great job with a lot of planning work as well. But the tasks that you see up there involve a lot of work that isn't necessarily much fun. But ironically, we do often, she tells me stories about often hearing from people like, I'm so glad that you got me to clean that up. Or that kind of thing. It's ironic that it often they end up being happy about it in the long run, even on something really significant like the Garfield Project.
Definitely with the Garfield Project, it's not just the property owner, but it's our whole neighborhood.
Yeah.
Not just happy to see it cleaned up, but happy to see one of our neighbors much happier and healthier.
That's good.
She needed help.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that started out as a nuisance turned into a dangerous building abatement issue, and Tim's going to just touch base on 665, 663, or 633 and 625 Peace Portal Drive, the old Casa Azul building and the attached building to that, and then we'll be done.
Hello again. I'm not sure if everybody had the last update, but the last time I was here, I was given an update on where we were at with the Peace Portal building. And at that point, we had gone out for bid once, and we got no responses back. So I'd followed up with all the contractors we'd sent the bid out to on our small works roster, and they recommended that we do some due diligence work on our part so that they would have an idea of what the whole scope of their work was if they were going to bid on the project at all. So we did that. We went out, we hired an asbestos company that went through, surveyed the whole building, told us what kind of asbestos we were dealing with in 665 Peace Portal. And we also hired the engineer that did the original report for us to go out there and examine the foundation wall that we believe to be supporting some of Peace Portal Drive. The good news out of those two reports is the engineer came back indicating that a previous public works project to install sewer lines took out any of the surcharge that was previously being held up by that wall, so that that foundation wall, subgrade, wasn't holding anything back anymore, and we could tear down everything. The bad news from those two reports is the asbestos survey that found 16 different samples of asbestos throughout the building. So that's a very high number in comparison to what you usually find within a building. But that was what we ended up with. So with those two reports in tow, we went out to bid again to all the demolition contractors on our small works roster. We had a significant interest this time. We did a pre-bid meeting where we had five contractors, sometimes multiple people from that contracting agency here. We walked through the building, we walked around the building, we talked about everything. They asked all the questions that they could think of to ask. I answered them to the best of my ability. Went up, the bid closed, and at bid closing we ended up only getting one bid submitted into the city. So, the one bid that did get submitted was submitted by Wrecking Ball Demolition out of Everett, Washington for $406,361.79. So, that's drastically higher than what we had hoped to see. And right now, we are going through a process with my legal counsel to kind of identify what that means for us going forward and what we're going to do next.
And we'll report back.
And we'll report back in 2 weeks. Hopefully,
questions?
I have more options.
I have a question, Tim. So we ended up with just one bid, way higher than we thought. Do you think that was bid high because he basically didn't want the job? Or of course, they don't know if there's going to be other bids. But there's obviously some really big issue. It seems like it's a very difficult, problematic site.
Yes.
So we'll have to look into this a little deeper. And then possibly put it out for bids again. Is that the thinking, or we don't really know?
At this point, you know, obviously we're going to approach our legal counsel about all of those types of options moving forward.
But okay. Can you report a little bit on you've spoken with the contractor?
Yeah. I did speak with Wrecking Ball Demolition. I wanted to, in case you guys had specific questions on why it was so high, and they set up a meeting with the three different staff members they had assigned to evaluating the bid package. And they gave me all sorts of reasons why they felt their bid was justified. The prevailing tone of the conversation kept going back to, this is not a typical demolition. This is not a typical demolition. This is, you know, a lot of asbestos. Combine a lot of asbestos with the building currently falling down, the ceiling texture has asbestos in it, and the ceiling is collapsed in about a third of the building. So it's actively, I guess, hazardous in a way inside of the building. And to make matters worse, because of that building failing in or falling in, they can't abate the building in a typical fashion where they go in and scrape it off and do things like that. Instead, what they have to do is they have to remove essentially brick by brick or piece by piece, all by hand, because they don't want to risk any machinery getting in there and causing damage to the building, you know, that it's connected to, or the rest of the building. And so with that in mind, they have to wrap every piece of that building in three wraps of visqueen and put it into a trailer and document that and transport that to a hazardous waste site.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. You can really see from the rear, if you go back behind, it's just caving in.
Yeah.
It's, something's got to happen. Okay, well, thanks for that report.
You're welcome.
Okay, next is public safety. We've got an update from the chief.
evening, Council. Should I be over here?
Good evening, Council. I was going to report to you this evening on LEMAP, which was an assessment of your police department conducted last week. LEMAP stands for a law enforcement assessment program sponsored by WASPIC, which is the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. It's a highly specialized, unbiased, and comprehensive look at the administration and the operation of police departments. The draft report will come within a week. The assessors left late last week. I should receive a draft report next week. A final report will come out in 30 days. The assessors, in this case, the chief of police in Bellingham, the chief of police in Lake Stevens, the former chief of police in Kent, two records managers, and a very talented lieutenant out of Bellingham Police Department, who expressed to me an interest in becoming your next chief of police. LEMAP is an invaluable tool in designing a strategic approach to aligning the department's administration of functions and services with the published professional standards and generally accepted professional practices of law enforcement across the country. It will increase the efficiency of your department, and it will reduce the liability risks that are inherent in law enforcement. Some of the areas that they covered while they were here for 2 days, having previously reviewed many documents that we provided them before their arrival, and the week that they were taking putting the report together, included management, staffing, organization, and utilization of personnel, operations and enforcement, policies and procedures, records management, evidence property control systems, communications and dispatching, recruiting selection, physical management, training, complaint process, discipline systems, performance evaluations, equipment, mutual aid, and space and facilities. This is the third LEMAP that I've gone through, and I have always found them highly useful. They are costly. This one will cost us somewhere around $6,000. It will be worth every cent. Happy to answer any questions about that.
Any questions for the chief?
No. Thank you for arranging that. I'm sure that's very valuable assessment from outside sources. That's great. Do we have an administrative services report?
No, no report.
No report. And a city manager report?
Council Mayor, I've got a few things to talk about tonight. First off, we did have a chance to meet with the school district superintendent. The chief and I were there on Friday, meet with him regarding the school closure. We're going to probably talk more about that as we get more information from the next steps ahead. But it's obvious with all of the things that are happening in the United States today, protection of school and children is a high priority for all of us. And so I just wanted to let you know we have been working on that, and we'll talk more about that later on. Another item is, if you recall last December in this room, Paul Saul and Sam Freeman came and were pleading for permits and all kinds of things, and so I called him and asked, what's going on? You really rallied us to support the project, and why haven't we received a permit? Why isn't the dirt turning? And Sam, I think, was caught a little bit off guard on that question. So I expect to get something back soon. But I think if the council made an effort to try to accommodate a developer, there should be mutual respect there. So we're expecting them to come back and give us a report on what they expect. The next thing I want to talk about just briefly is some years of service awards. And You know, the city has really a long-standing group of long-term employees, and we'll start with the most current ones, which are, or most recent ones, are Skylar Deppenbaugh and Tim Woodard, 1 year with the city. The next group is 10 years of service, which is Jake Fair and Michael Jones. 10 years, long time. We have the next group is 20 years, which is Amber Leinhout and Christy Shipp. And then the last, which I think is amazing, is Leroy Dougal at 30 years. And so that's just an amazing accomplishment for all of those folks. I just wanted to also mention, I've been following up with the conversation we've had about the positions in town. And you know, we've talked about, is there some way for the city to help facilitate support for those folks as they want to transition out? And so far, we haven't made particularly much progress, but I'd be happy to talk more about that, particularly with you, Mr. Hopkins, because I know you've got an interest in that specifically. So it looks like, really, that it's going to be a very difficult task for lots of reasons. So we'll continue to see what we can do. It's kind of outside our scope, but we'll continue to figure out what that might look like. You have, I think, a copy of the letter that Dennis Olison gave to the council. You know, this is a subject that he's had dear at heart for quite a while, which he's asked the council to consider. And the basis of it is that we have 5 wards, and he feels strongly that those people in the ward should be able to represent, is it 3 wards? Yeah, 3 wards. Should be able to vote on their ward candidates. And that the way the system works now, that if there's more than 2 candidates, there's a ward vote, and then it goes at large for the runoff. And he feels that that's not appropriate for the city. So I told him that I would bring this up. He has the letter. And we need to probably have a conversation about what at all the city might want to do. I think it's really a state law that we'd have to initiate changes for. And, of course, that's a big job. And we don't know if other cities have similar problems or not. But he feels strongly about that. So really it's going to come back to the council, I think, as an agenda item. You can't decide tonight. And we haven't done the background to talk about it. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I thought you were asking a question. Nope, so I just wanted to let you know, I mean, he's talked to me several times about it, and I suggested that if he wants to continue that, he needs to really make a formal request. That's what he's done.
I'd like to know other cities that have that system, ward-only or district-only.
Yeah, we'll do some background. I think we can do that for you. You need to have that, or you can do anything. I mentioned Mr. Saul's property. We also want to tell you that the police chief recruitment's in place now. We're starting to get feedback from consultants for that. We're expecting to have a selection by the end of March. Then move forward with that. As you know, we already are getting candidates, as the chief mentioned, contacting us directly now, which I think is a really terrific thing to know about. And, of course, if someone's local, like someone in Bellingham, for example, that's terrific. This could save some money in terms of a move. And some other things as well. So we'll continue to follow that. I did get an email from Brianna Murray. If you recall, she's the woman who's our lobbyist. And you probably have been following along with the emails. The Exit 274 and East Bend infrastructure plans have been kind of moving forward through the legislative process. And both the House and Senate are now trying to reconcile their various budgets. We will probably know that pretty soon. They're somewhat far apart in some areas, but we'll see what happens. She's asked me how you'd like to have a report from her. She's happy to do a report written. This is at the end of the session, right? It's kind of a session end report. She's planning to be in the area on the 20th of March, which is a kind of an off week from when you're typically meeting. It's between the third Tuesday of the month. And she's happy to come and talk to you if you want to do a special meeting. She can do something on the phone. We've got just a verbal report. So I just wanted to get some feedback on how you'd like to her to report the status of the past legislative session.
When is the session over?
Oh. Is it the 8th? Yeah, thank you.
Would it be possible to do a written report and then be available for questions?
Sure.
Via phone?
Mm-hmm. Do that.
Yeah.
I think a written report soon after the session closes would be good to have.
Okay. Yeah, we could also, if the council feels like it, we could have we could announce a special meeting, and then whether you want to come or not, we could still have something. If she's going to be in the county, we might as well take advantage of her presence, yeah. Get some feedback about future conversations. Okay, yeah. I'll report that back. And the last thing I want to talk about is my retirement. So effective June 15th is my last day of work for the city of Blaine. After it'll be 36 years of public service, and so between now and then I'll be working on a transition. I need to meet with Christy tomorrow morning to find out what all my requirements are and make sure that I'm on target, on task with everything I need to do. But it's been a wonderful experience here, and I'll have more to say about that in the future, but I just want to let you know I'm going to be retiring. Any questions or comments?
If you must.
Come best.
I mean, what can we say?
Yeah, thank you. Any comments or questions or corrections?
You deserve it, Mr. Okay. Wilbrecht, by all, right. all means.
Thank you.
Huge loss.
Well, you're very welcome. It's been a delightful 5 years.
You committed for 5 years.
I did.
At least, for Blaine.
So yeah, I'm known to keep a commitment. I got married like 39 years ago. It's not an easy thing to keep a commitment, is it? So, but anyway, it's been wonderful, and I certainly have had a good experience here working with everyone and being able to be associated with really a fine city. And when I looked to come to Washington from California, I was looking for cities that had the characteristics that Blaine has, and so I was really fortunate to be selected and been able to work here. And looking forward to be more active and involved in the future. We're not planning to move anywhere, and we love being here and looking forward to more stuff as a civilian. I have the chief to look toward on that note. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if everybody will take a look at their calendars, the calendar dates on here. If there's no unfinished business, is there any council new business?
Yes.
Alicia, you have some new business.
I do. I would like to add to the agenda for our next meeting staff to please look into some of the merits and challenges to adding a full-time police officer at our schools. I'd also like to add with that note, thank you to our police department and our school district for handling this last big incident so well and putting our kids' safety first. I very much appreciate that, and I know the community does too. Clearly not one answer will be the school safety solution, but I'd like to look at that one particular piece of it from a city standpoint and just kind of look at what our options would be.
We currently have a half-time resource officer at the school that the school district pays for, is that correct?
They pay for half a position.
So are we talking, Alicia, about adding on to that to make it a full-time?
What I would like to do is see what our options are. So let's have that discussion. Maybe the city staff can present a couple of things and what that would look like and how we might pay for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of pieces when we look at a community issue at a local and, of course, larger level. And it's the one piece that I think that the city could potentially respond to. So I'd like to have more information on how we might be able to do that.
I would certainly support that. I think everyone at this dais would support
it. It has to be coordinated with the school.
Looking into that.
So my suggestion is we can report at the next meeting what our current practices are so you understand what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe some analysis of potential deficiencies or benefits of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what some of your options are going forward, whether you want to talk about a full-time school research officer on site who's consistently the same person, for example. I think our practice now is to have some rotation done by staff. But we'll bring all that back to
mm-hmm.
you with some options and some cost studies as well.
I'd like to see a job description of that position, what that would entail.
Since we're gonna discuss the school officer next week or 2 weeks from now, could we also kind of get a brief synopsis of any sort of active shooter type training that your department or local agencies have had?
And Just if I could add one more thing, there have previously been different sort of structures to the school resource officer, it being one officer, it being people rotating in and out. There, if we could get some sort of idea of the history of the position, when it was put into place, how it's been filled in the past, and why changes have been made, so that we can get some sort of institutional memory on board to help us with our decision making.
And I would add that I'd be leaning strongly toward personally, when I made this request, I was specifically thinking of a full-time, one person professionally placed at the school. So what that would look like is kind of what I had in mind, so that I'm imagining students having a relationship with that officer for reasons outside of just the, of course, necessary school safety issue as well.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we have a closed session tonight.
Yes, we have an executive session with no action to be taken to discuss
potential litigation
pursuant to RCW 42.30.110. So we will recess for executive session, which should take approximately how long, do we think?
Yeah, the most.
30 minutes or so? Okay. All right, we will now recess.